This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580 and online at will.illinois.edu. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. Thanks for tuning in today. Well, to get things started in this portion of the program, we're going to take a listen to Iris DeMent, a tune called Mama's Opry. Why? Well, we're going to talk about country music, and like the story told in this song, our guest, Dana Jennings, grew up with country music as a guide and companion.
She grew up plain and simple in a farming town. Her daddy played the fiddle and used to do the calling when they had hold downs. She says the neighbors would come and they'd move all my grandma's furniture round. And there'd be 20 or more there on an old wooden floor, dancing to a country song. Her favorite songs. And on Saturday nights there was a radio show and she would sing along. And I'll never forget her face when she revealed to me that she dreamed about singing at the Grand Old Opry. Her eyes, oh, how they sparkled when she sang those songs. While she was hanging the clothes on the line, I was a kid just playing in the grass to her, we might have seen obliviously. But there ain't no doubt about it, she sure made her mark on me. She played old gospel records on the phonograph. She turned them up loud and we'd sing along to those days of past. But just now that I am older, it occurs to me that I was singing Opry. And we sang Sweet Rose of Sharon, Abide With Me, till I ride the gospel ship to heaven's jubilee. And in that great triumphant morning, my soul will be free, and my burdens will be lifted, my Savior's face I see.
Iris DeMent with Emmy Lou Harris singing harmony. If you've just tuned in, we'll be talking about country music this afternoon. Like the story told in Mama's Opry, our guest Dana Jennings grew up with country music. Jennings says the music of Fats Domino and Johnny Cash served as his nursery rhymes. Now in his fifth decade, Dana Jennings says if you want to understand the U.S. in the 20th century, you need to listen to this music. In his words, if you truly want to understand the whole United States of America in the 20th century, you need to understand country music and the people who lived their lives by it. Dana Jennings has written a book about what country music has to give to us. The title, Sing Me Back Home, Love, Death, and Country Music. Listeners, I invite your questions and comments for our guest this afternoon. Join us with a telephone call, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Dana Jennings, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon, and thanks for introducing me to that tune, Mama's Opry.
Well, thanks a lot, Celeste. It's always exciting to get to talk about country music. And, you know, I don't know if you've ever had a guest start speaking to you in tears, but I have to admit, once again, listening to that song, yeah. It conjures all of these old memories. And I have to admit, I was fighting back the tears a little bit there.
Yeah. Well, I'm sorry about that. Sorry to make you cry.
No.
At the outset. Well, you know what? One of the things that I love about this tune, it reminds me of my mom, and she wasn't a country girl, but she sang, and we had the radio on, and we sang, and we had records, and it was very similar, except, you know, it was a different genre of music.
Yeah, one of the moments in that song that totally kills me is, just the simple image of her mother hanging the clothes out to the clothesline, and she's just playing there in the grass, and that's such a rural scene, which I suspect doesn't get as repeated as much nowadays.
No, not many of us hang out or wash.
Right.
Yeah. Well, my mom sang when she did dishes and she was ironing, and she sang all the time.
Mm-hmm.
When she was sad and when she was happy. And,
right.
Yeah. Well, what makes a country song a great song?
I think what I respond to most in country music is just the heart and the passion to it. The great country singers like Hank Williams and Lefty Frizzell and Johnny Cash and later on Iris DeMent, they're really singing from the heart, and it's that raw, unmediated emotion that that really gets to me.
Mm. Well, what did country music offer your parents and your grandparents?
Well, it offered them, a real sense of solace. We were rural, working class, poor people. There wasn't much to go around, and in country music, really, was partly a reflection of their lives, and if they could hear a good country song, it was able to articulate for them, all of these things that they weren't able to articulate.
Hmm. So, in one of the ways you put this in the book is, you say it was a novel for them. It was a hymn. It was the Bible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they. I didn't grow up among. Working people who were especially devout. They certainly didn't read books, and if they found the right song for 2.5 or 3 minutes, they could lose themselves in it, or also maybe find themselves in it.
Mm.
I think about my Uncle Lloyd, who was an alcoholic, and one of his absolute favorite songs was a song called "There Stands the Glass" by Webb Pierce, and for him, Pierce, in 2.5 minutes managed to sum up the kind of life that he was living.
Yeah, boy, that's a powerful tune too, isn't it?
Yeah, it's it's called. For decades, it's been called the national anthem of barrooms, or I guess, country barrooms anyway.
Mm. Well, tell us about the part of New Hampshire, Kingston, New Hampshire, you called home.
Well, it's changed a lot since 1957 when I was born, but when I was born there, it had 900 people. We had more dairy cows than we did people. And on one hand, it did have a, classic center of town, New England town green with the, beautiful colonial houses and beautiful, wooden white churches. But for those of us who couldn't afford those kind of houses, we lived in this old house that was a former shoe shop, and we were right at the edge of a snake-infested gravel pit, and in between there was a marsh. it was prime real estate.
Prime real estate. It was probably great though, being a kid.
Oh, it was
snakes and.
It was a great place to explore.
Marsh,
I mean, I had a lot of freedom as a kid, and there was certainly plenty of elbow room to go and look around, but I'll never forget, going back home to Kingston with my sons when they were, this is before they were 10, and I showed them where that house had once stood. And one of my sons just said, you know, Dad, you used to live here?
What do your kids think about, your boys think about country music?
They like it a lot. My older son, for a while, he had a radio show in college, and his nickname was Big Country. And he used to do a combination country, oldies, and southern rock show. But he likes country music a lot, and my younger son does too.
Yeah. So it wasn't a hard sell. It's a family
thing. Well, you know, when they were little boys, you know, when I'd give them a bath at night, I'd sing The Wreck of Old 97 to them. So I was, kind of paving the path, for them to be country fans.
Yeah. Well, back to Kingston, New Hampshire, in the 50s, at one point in the book you say as late as the 1960s, the Great Depression still hung over a good number of folks, of people. To what extent did the Depression sculpt country music and the people who made it?
It really... I really think that for classic country music, all of those great singers we think of, the ones I mentioned already, Johnny Cash and, including, Willie Nelson, who's still out there on the road, and Loretta Lynn and Patsy Cline, they were all children of the Depression and also of World War II. And those events hardened them and made them realistic, in a very country kind of way. They were speaking for their listeners that, you can't expect too much out of life, and a lot of times what you're going to get out of life is disappointment.
Mm. You quote Hank Williams in an epigraph at the outset of the book. You gotta have smelt a lot of mule manure before you can sing like a hillbilly. There's a lot of struggle in this music. Is that part of what you mean when you say if you want to understand the U.S. in the 20th century, you need to understand country music?
Yeah, I do, because I think a lot of times it's really easy to gloss over our country's arc, through that century, to the present day, and especially when you get past World War II, it's as if the economic engine just fired up for, all, 250 million people, and we were all, we were all buying a new car every year and living like Leave It to Beaver. Mm. And that just wasn't the case. In the late 50s, I think the statistic was something like, 22% of Americans were still living beneath the poverty line. But you didn't get that sense that there was this flip side, this dark flip side to American prosperity.
Yeah. Maybe here it would be good to mention Kitty Wells and her song, It Wasn't God Who Made Honky Tonk Angels.
Sure.
She was speaking to what you were just talking about in that song.
Right. She was speaking to a certain kind of woman, in an odd way, even because there weren't many female country singers at the time, that Wells was able to speak to the woman who's, really kind of, that rural silent majority who were still, told to shut up at the supper table. And, one of the frustrating tropes in country music is how it's always women who are leading men astray. And I think most of us know that in real life, and certainly in the lives of country singers, it tends to be men who are causing those kinds of problems.
Yeah. Well, what can we glean from listening to a song like I Walk the Line, Johnny Cash singing that?
Well, it's, you know, that's a song that I've, you know, literally listened to hundreds of times since I was a little boy. And when you first listen to it, or maybe even the first 100 times, it comes across as, you know, Cash very forcefully, you know, telling of his devotion to his, you know, to his wife. It was a song, you know, written for his first wife, a woman named Vivian Liberto. And but the line that jumped out at me when I was writing the book was, "I keep a close watch on this heart of mine," and it made me think about how, you know, out in the country, you only keep a close watch on anything that you don't trust. Hmm. You know, you keep a close watch on a dog that bites, or you keep a close watch, you know, when you're burning a field on a windy day. You keep a close watch on a foreman who, you know, whom you don't trust. And, you know, I kind of, thinking in that way, I kind of riffed on that idea and turned it in. I think it's kind of a dark, cheating song because, you know, in his actual life, you know, even as Cash wrote that song, you know, he wasn't faithful to his wife.
Yeah, yeah. It is cheating heart.
Yes.
Right from the get-go, because he was a newlywed, I believe, when he wrote that.
So. Yeah, but, you know, when musicians on the road, you know, have a hard time walking the line. Mm.
This is the Afternoon Magazine. Our guest this afternoon is writer Dana Jennings. His most recent book, Sing Me Back Home, Love, Death, and Country Music. My name is Celeste Quinn. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Listeners, you can join us this afternoon with a telephone call, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Let's take a call now from a listener in West Chicago, line 4. Hi.
Good afternoon, yeah. How come all these country western bands of late, if, you know, it's like, to me, country western is always a downer, a negative, you know, or sad feeling. And it seems like lately a lot of songs, no matter if it's country western or rock pop or something, and I could see that being blues, but it's just like, you know, and everybody's life story is behind it. And I know rock musicians, I like to, you know, throw their things when they're kind of half in reality and half out. But, you know, I listen to music quite often, but it's almost to the point where I'd rather listen to talk radio than some of the music, because I've already had a sad day, so why should I make compound it?
Well, I think, you know, part of it is when I think about, you know, the classic country singers, there is some joy in some of their songs. I mean, I think of, like, you know, Jambalaya by, you know, by Hank Williams. But I think for a lot of them, it was, you know, they grew up hard, and, you know, whether you're a book writer or whether you're a songwriter, you tend to, you write about the things that you know about. And, you know, a lot of those singers and songwriters knew about hard times, but, you know, on the other hand, I can't speak for modern Nashville because I don't know that music as well. But you know, they'd still, you know, even if it was a sad song, they'd still be, you know, you could dance to it, and if you're able to dance to it, maybe a little bit of dancing will make you happy.
It does. It does. The other thing is too, I remember Gene Autry, Roy Rogers, and, you know, Dale Evans singing songs, and they were more of an upbeat type thing. Even Dean Martin and Real Bravo. And mm-hmm. I'm a Western nut, so I always liked that. I grew up in the Southwest. So, but anyway, great show. Have a great week. Thank you.
Okay, thank
Thanks
you.
Thanks for the call this afternoon. Talk radio can sure bring you down, though, too, from time to time. You know, I'm thinking here about up music and good times, and we've got Bill Monroe here in the studio on a disc. And I thought maybe we could play a wonderful tune from him, recorded in 1950. And I would like to play this in part because it's an up tune, and it also is a way to recognize those who went before us. And one of the things that you say in your book, Dana Jennings, is that country lets you and your sons listen with our fathers and mothers. And so maybe here we'll go back in time to some fine dancing music. This is Bill Monroe, and this is a tribute to his Uncle Penn, and that's the name of the tune, Uncle Penn.
Oh, the people would come from far away. Till the break of day, when the caller hollered do-si-do, you knew Uncle Penn was ready to go. Late in the evening, about sundown, on the hill of the town, Uncle Penn played the fiddle on high. Would ring, you could hear it talk, you could hear it sing. An old piece he called Soldier Joy, and morning cold Boston Boy. The greatest of all was Jenny Lynn. To me, that's where fiddling began. Late in the evening, about sundown, on a hill above the town, Uncle Penn played the fiddle on high. It would ring, you could hear it talk, you could hear it sing.
Bill Monroe, Uncle Penn, recorded in 1950. Talk with us a little bit about Bill Monroe. He was recording into the 1990s. He died in 1996.
Yeah, I mean, he's, you know, he's one of the master musicians of not just country music, but American music in the 20th century. He with his musicians, he created bluegrass music, and he really, for me, and I think for classic country fans, Monroe and the musicians he trained really kept alive a certain kind of country music, that we loved, even as the country music coming out of Nashville really started to change significantly, once the 1970s got going. There's a real American rural feel to his music that moves, has moved me, in the past decades.
Mm. Bluegrass is going strong these days.
Mm-hmm.
Alison Krauss comes immediately to mind.
Right, right.
Yeah.
And, Ricky Skaggs is still out there. He recorded a wonderful version of Uncle Penn back in the 80s. He runs his own record company. And one of the things, the phenomenon of the soundtrack to Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? No one in a million years would have thought that a bluegrass soundtrack to an art movie could sell so many records.
Yeah. Well, what do you think about the Alison Krauss Robert Plant collaboration, Raising Sand?
I haven't listened to much of it. I think any time when musicians are able to break out of the straitjackets of their genres, it's a good thing, because people forget that's how American music keeps evolving. Rockabilly is a function of white country boys trying to emulate the rhythm and blues and the blues they were hearing on the radio. So you need that kind of cross pollination. I think one of the things that always hurts a culture is when, we keep cutting the cultural pie thinner and thinner, You know, so you you have people who are indie rock fans who are only fans of people who you know, who have blonde hair from the from the Midwest, and you have indie rock fans of only people who play the klezmer from Maine. You know, it's just I feel like the splintering, that kind of splintering doesn't do us any good.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's my hope with a disc like Raising Sand that people might go and seek out, you know, some of the great masters. I mean, here Plant and Krauss are one of the tunes that they record is a Doc Watson tune, mm-hmm. Your Long Journey, which I think they did a great job on.
Yeah, I mean, we always need you always need a door into an art form, and you know, and as you say, as strange as it may seem, Plant and Krauss could be a doorway for someone into Flat and Scruggs, which is a good thing.
Yeah. Were you and your family fans of rockabilly?
Yeah, I mean, we all loved country music, as you know, as did all my, you know, my old lady relatives and my older relatives. But, you know, we listened to Top 40 radio, too. And, you know, my folks were 17 in 1957 when I was born. And, you know, my dad just loved early rock and roll and the rockabillies. You know, in my house, you know, you'd hear, you know, Buddy Holly and Carl Perkins and Jerry Lee Lewis, you know, in addition to, you know, Chuck Berry and Bo Diddley and the Coasters. And my mother, being a small-town American girl in 1957, you know, she just loved Elvis Presley. You know, we had more Elvis Presley 45s than any other singer, and it wasn't my father who was buying them.
Yeah. They were so young.
Yes,
your
yes.
Parents.
It's hard to believe at this point, but
but
they were, and they still are.
Yeah, well, that's the great thing about being a parent at a young age, I suppose. Let's take another call. Our guest this afternoon, Dana Jennings, he is a journalist and a novelist. His latest book, Sing Me Back Home, Love, Death, and Country Music. Let's take a call now from a listener in Dalton, Illinois. Line 4, hi.
Hi, I'd like to know what the name of that song was in the beginning. Oh, that sounds wonderful.
It's Mama's Opry by a woman named Iris Dement, and she has 4 albums, and they're all wonderful. Mama's Opry is on her first album, which is called Infamous Angel, and it's just a wonderful album.
That sounds really good. I enjoy a lot of bluegrass, and now my husband is more country than I am, but. I got into the rockabilly and things like that.
Who else do you like to listen to?
Well, let's see. Johnny Cash, of course, and some of Elvis. I don't particularly like a lot of Elvis, but for the most part, I like his Sun Collection.
Right.
It's interesting how you brought this out, you know, with the different country stars. But my favorite is Hank Williams.
Yep.
Mm.
Yeah, it's hard to you can't get around old Hank.
No.
he's my favorite too. I mean, the raw purity of his voice and.
Yeah,
and just all those great songs that he wrote,
and Kitty Wells as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, it sounds to me that you definitely like people who twang.
Oh yeah.
that's a good thing.
Oh yeah, I've enjoyed the music, and I'm enjoying your show, and I'd love to get the book.
Okay, well.
It's available at fine booksellers everywhere, right?
Yeah.
Yeah,
and on Amazon.
And it one of the things that I really love about the book is that there's a wonderful discography at the end.
Yeah, I really You know, I wanted to have fun writing the discography, and I know, and I kind of poke fun at myself because, you know, in this day and age with the iPod, the it's almost the idea of a discography is almost beside the point, but I felt like I had to go ahead and do it.
Yeah.
Do you bring out Hank Snow in the book at all?
Yeah. No, I write about I'm Moving On, and yeah, I do. I write about Hank Snow.
Oh, he's another great one.
Yeah, and, you know, I've been everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, I, actually, my two sons and I will go around the house and torture my wife by singing, you know, I've Been Everywhere.
You know, that's a fun song to
if
sing.
If you're going to Winnemucca, Mac.
Yeah. Oh, well, thank you very much.
Well, thank you.
You're very welcome.
All
how
right,
about
have a good
that? Introduce somebody to Iris DeMent. That's a good thing.
Absolutely.
That's a wonderful doorway.
Yes.
Let's take another call now. A listener in Terre Haute, Indiana, line two. Hi.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
Fine. How are you?
I'm wonderful. I've been enjoying your conversation. You know, do you cover, like, Shel Silverstein and some of those people from the 50s into the 60s and wrote a lot of the hits? Another person that you may have overlooked is Dolly Parton writes some very strong, The Coat of Many Colors is probably her best songs ever. This clearly comes from being in poverty.
Right.
And yeah, it's well-crafted and well-sung. I think a lot of it's the delivery that a lot of people watch for.
It's funny. There's a section in the book where I write about Coat of Many Colors and also another wonderful song she wrote was In the Good Old Days When Times Were Bad, and I write about a Merle Haggard's version of that song. But yeah, Dolly, actually to me, Dolly's more important to me as a songwriter than as a singer. I felt like as her career progressed, I think she became less interested in being a country musician and really became more interested in being a star, you know, which is fine. I mean, you know, we all have to do what we have to do. But as a country fan, you know, I like her when she was younger and when she was writing hard and wasn't as interested in being a celebrity.
Hmm. And he mentioned, the caller mentioned Shel Silverstein, and you do write about him, too, in the book.
Yeah, people are always shocked about Silverstein's connection, actually, with country music and with rock and roll. He wrote a bunch of great songs. He wrote One's on the Way for Loretta Lynn. He wrote, he wrote A Boy Named Sue. You know, that was Johnny Cash's, biggest pop hit, not his biggest country hit, but A Boy Named Sue. You know, he wrote Cover of the Rolling Stone for Dr. Hook and the Medicine Show. He's a hilarious songwriter.
Yeah. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Our guest this afternoon, Dana Jennings, author of Sing Me Back Home, Love, Death, and Country Music. My name is Celeste Quinn. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Listeners, if you'd like to join us this afternoon, give us a call, 333-9455, and toll free, 800-222-9455. Back to our listener in Dalton. She likes the twang, and you call the years 1950 to 1970 a golden age of twang. Why do you suppose there was such a burst of country music over the course of those two decades that was so great?
Well, I think part of it was a reflection just in the explosion in popular music in general. I think it was a real post-World War II phenomenon. You had all of these young artists who would, survive World War II. They knew that they weren't going to be satisfied with the world that their parents had known. And the 1950s, you know, we're living in this post-atomic world that's uncertain. And I think, you know, whether you were a jazz artist or whether you were you know, a rock and roll artist or a country artist, you're trying to explain those changes in the world to your perceived listeners. And I think country music does a great job of that.
Yeah. Well, everybody got Patsy Cline, for sure.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, so this might be a great opportunity to hear a little Patsy Cline. And speaking of crazy times, why don't we hear Crazy?
All right.
All right.
Crazy, I'm crazy for feeling so lonely. I'm crazy, crazy for feeling so blue. I knew you'd love me as long as you wanted, and then someday you'd leave me for somebody new. Worry, why do I? What in the world did I do? Oh, crazy for thinking that my love could hold you. I'm crazy for trying and crazy for crying. And I'm crazy for loving you. Crazy for thinking that my love could hold you. I'm crazy for trying and crazy for crying. And I'm crazy for loving you.
You know, that's it's a sad song, but there's sort of a balm in there in terms of you're not alone. You know,
right? It's you know, it, country does this a lot, but it's one of those sad songs that makes you feel good.
Yeah, yeah. And I was thinking about Roy Orbison, same kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, kind of an ordinary guy with an extraordinary gift.
Right.
You know,
right.
In terms of he moves you.
Right, and you know, and the sadder that Roy got, the better you felt, you know.
Yeah.
You know, listening to a song like Crying just, you know, sends shivers up your spine.
Yeah, yeah. Patsy Cline, you write in this book that her death in a plane crash just really shook your family.
Yeah, I mean, she, you know, she was only 30 years old. And I don't think I'm exaggerating when I say that, you know, she died the same year that JFK did. And I know that JFK's death, you know, stunned, you know, you can't articulate what it did to our nation. But I really feel that to, you know, someone like my mother who loved Patsy Cline's music and my Grammy Jennings and my Grammy Britton, that on a really deep level, her death mattered more to them than Kennedy's death. Mm. Just because she was able to articulate what it was like to be a certain kind of country woman, and to really transcend her tough childhood in the Virginia Hills.
Mm. So Patsy Cline really, really captured heart and soul.
Yeah.
Let's take another call. A listener in Champaign, line one. Hi. Line one?
Hello.
Hello there.
Hi.
Oh, you're on now. Yes, I've been listening to your program, and some of us old-timers remember Roy Acuff, Jimmy Davis, and Carl Schmitt, and Eddie Arnold, and Ernest Tubbs and the Texas Troubadours, Red Foley.
Those are all wonderful singers.
They're all from the 40s and 50s, and every time I hear somebody talking about the good old days, they're all talking about the 70s,
well,
and not the 50s.
Well, I don't talk about the 70s. It's funny you should mention Roy Acuff. One of my neighbors brought me over an amazing gift the other night. She was cleaning out her attic, and she had a set of 4/78s by Roy Acuff in their original package from 1946. And she gave them to me as a gift because she knew that I'd just written my book about country music.
What a great gift.
Yeah.
Yeah. And to that listener in Champaign, our guest, Dana Jennings, he really focuses on 1950 to 1970, those two decades, the 50s and the 60s. So he stops at 1970. So more or less. Let's take one more call before we run out of time. A listener in Decatur, line two. Hi.
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 I just wanted to mention that I think Emmylou Harris is the most under-recognized singer. I think she's probably one of the best singers ever. And mentioned that, whenever they do these tributes to Roy Orbison, they always put this K.D. Lang song on, and all they did with that was just overlaid on top of Roy Orbison. The only female singer he ever sang a duet with was Emmylou Harris. Because I read that he considered her the best. But anyway, I just want to mention that.
No, Emmylou is darn good.
She sure is, and she's still out there recording. And she sang harmony with Iris DeMent on Mama's Opry.
Yep.
Well, now we're at the end. We have to wrap things up, and I think what we should do is go out with Merle Haggard, who gave you the title for your book.
Absolutely.
Sing Me Back Home. What do you want to say about this tune and Merle Haggard?
Well, Merle is one. There's no question Merle is one of the heroes in my book, and I think Merle articulates blue-collar country life better than any singer of the 1960s.
Okay, well, here we go.
So, all right,
Sing Me Back Home.
The warden led a prisoner down the hallway to his doom, and I stood up to say goodbye like all the rest. And I heard him tell the warden just before he reached my cell, let my guitar play in friend in my request. Let him sing me back home with a song I used to hear. Make my old memories come alive. Take me away and turn back the years. Sing me back home before I die. I recall a Sunday morning a choir from off the street came in to sing a few old gospel songs. And I heard him tell the singers, there's a song my mama sang. Could I hear it once before you move along? Won't you sing me back home with the song I used?
Merle Haggard, Sing Me Back Home. Merle Haggard's tune, Sing Me Back Home, gave Dana Jennings the title for his book, Sing Me Back Home, Love, Death, and Country Music. Our guest this afternoon was Dana Jennings, author of Sing Me Back Home. He's a journalist and a novelist. He's an editor with the New York Times. And his book, Sing Me Back Home, Love, Death, and Country Music, is published by Faber & Faber, which is an affiliate of Farrar, Straus, and Giroux.